Blog Talk Radio.
Open. Before we get to our special guest, Webster, I want to thank our sponsors, which is awesome restaurant, Soul Food Restaurant in D.C., Tory's Restaurant, 700 V Street Northwest. It's the awesomest restaurant for your soul food. Stop by and make sure you get that. We're celebrating 45 years of publishing. Be There Magazine, Russell's News. From Russell's News to Be There Magazine is milestone. We're on our newsmaker line, the one and only Webster. He is a hand dance event promoter and more. Webster, tell us a little bit about yourself and who you are. Webster.
Hello? Hello?
Webster, you on the air, go ahead.
Russell, can you hear me?
I can hear you, go ahead. Webster, you on the air, go ahead.
Good morning, guests. And it's good to be here with you also, Russell. Let me tell everybody a little bit about myself. My name is Webster Holmes. I've been involved in hand dancing for now about 30 years. I've did events at some of the places around town, hand dance clubs that a lot of you all are familiar with, places like 2K9, Buds, Collar Bears, Murals, Killies, Fish Tea, Eclipse. I've been doing this so long, it's just been a part of my life, you know. I've met some great people, great promoters. Some of the promoters I've worked with is my original partner, C.C. Coleman, Brad, Bradford of Smooth and Easy, known as Brad, Pat Michelle. She's a promoter out of the Eclipse and other places. Some of the DJs I worked with was Lady D, Lil Billy, Victor Smooth, Clyde Bird, Nate the Skate, Reggie, Lil Bobby, Black Melvin, Leroy, Lady JC, Peaches, Jazz Funk. So we have had some great events and great people to come out. And I guess, Russell, you can just ask me whatever information you need to know about me and things that I've done.
Well, I'll tell you, Webster, you covered a hand of people, a span of people. I mean, you touched everybody's life in that hand dance community. I mean, you go back, way back, with all the DJs and all the event people that you gave. Tell us, how did you get to connect with all these DJs? And you were there with the Eclipse, Brad, and when they had no hand dancing classes. You was an innovator of when the hand dancing classes started, and you started doing your own events. Tell us how you had the inclination or the vision to want to not only dance, but now create hand dancing venues, new venues that nobody else had. Like, for instance, you would go and find a venue like Mirrors, or how did you find a place like Mirrors?
Well, it was a blessing, really, you know. And the thing about it, I love hand dancing, you know. And, you know, I started out just dancing, and eventually I got into some classes. Even though I knew how to hand dance, I just wanted to learn new turns and moves. And so I think I first started out in a class so far back, I can't remember. But anyway, I started out in a hand dance class, and then I just wanted more out of it, you know. So one of the first places that I got involved with having a hand dance event was at the 2K9. And we started dancing there. In fact, that worked with me was Lawrence Bradford, you know, of Smooth and Easy. And Lady D was the DJ. And then it just blossomed from there. I went from that that particular, it was a restaurant club, and then I moved on to Bud's, you know. But I met her, and she wanted to start a hand dance event at her place, and she asked me to work with her. And I don't know, it just went from there. Then I went back to actually 2K9, which was then changed, the name was changed to Killy. And a lot of these places wanted hand dancing, because hand dancing was known as a peaceful, lovable event. And I mean, back then, I mean, hand dancing was superior. I mean, it was so outstanding. Everybody loved it, you know. And Lady D, this sister, in fact, I was speaking to her last night. This sister had one of the baddest hand dance crowds ever to come in D.C. She had a Tuesday and Sunday night with about over 400 people. I mean, people came from everywhere, Baltimore, Virginia, I mean, Maryland, D.C. I mean, the place was so packed. Her events were so packed, you had to stand in line to get in. And we worked together, and then I started, you know, I don't know, people started coming out to my events, and then I started just opening other places, you know. One good place for me, in fact, two good places with me was Mirrors, and most people know me from the Mirrors. They enjoyed that place. It was off of New York Avenue, Washington, D.C., and it was just so easy to get there. You could hit it, you know, from any direction coming into D.C., you know, off the interstate, you know. And people just used to love to come, you know. And it was a lot of love in hand dancing. Then people just enjoyed not only just the dance, they enjoyed a lot of people, you know. And I think a lot of times people came out just to see the people and to see the great hand dancers, people that really were known for hand dancing.
When you got into the events and you kept going from one event to another event, what was the take on the crowd? Like, you hear people say, oh, so-and-so has got a hand dancing event on Tuesday. And then someone else will open up another event that same night, and they say, that person stole my crowd. Is there any truth to that, or does people just are not that loyal to a promoter? I mean, do people do that? They say, I used to hear, like, you know, rumors about people that say, oh, you know what, so-and-so is doing an event at this particular location, and it's doing well. And then all of a sudden, 3 months later, somebody else opens up another event that same night, and they say, oh, they stole the crowd. Is that a true statement in hand dancing?
Well, you had a lot of promoters who felt that way, and I'm not going to get into calling names, but it was a lot of jealousy and hate among the promoters. I wouldn't say among the people who came out to dance, but the promoters, you know. Some promoters felt that they were supposed to be the greatest promoters and everybody was supposed to come to their event. And they did feel when a new promoter or another hand dance DJ or promoter started doing a night the same night they did, it was just a lot of hatred, you know, behind that. But it was a lot of love, too. You know, the hatred came mainly between DJs and promoters. The people who liked the hand dance, they had no problem, you know. And to me, it was still, you know, enough room for everybody to make money because that's what it boiled down to. You know, people felt you was taking their crowd and stealing their money, you know. And, you know, that was a black thing. You know, that's been going on for centuries among black people, feeling that another black person took some from them, you know, instead of us working together. Because, you know, it was enough money for everybody. And none of us can make all the money. I mean, the billionaires can't make it all, you know. It's always, you know, a challenge. And I think that, you know, that's one of the things I feel blacks still today need to work on is, you know, showing more love and working with each other and helping each other. And the events could be even greater. But, again, I try to look around those things because, you know, I ran into situations like that. But, you know, still you keep going and you still got to keep loving your enemies. And that's the way I look at it.
When it comes to doing a hand dancing event, what is the number one aspect of the event? What kills hand dancing events? How important is the DJ? How important is the venue? How important is the bartender? How important is the person at the door? What kills a hand dancing event? I mean, what elements that will make your event close down?
Well, in hand dancing, it's always the size of the floor. The place that had the biggest hand dance floor and the best DJ, and really it didn't have to be the greatest DJ, but the floor was important, you know. You know, it's, people just always wanted to be on a big floor, and they enjoyed it because there's so many moves in hand dancing. I mean, the spins, the step work, you know, and people just like room to move around. But it's always, for me, has been the floor. And also, you had great DJs, people like the father. I mentioned Lady D. Also, you had Lance Bradford. He had great events. Shortay, Little Billy was a DJ that people used to like to follow as well. Betty Boo, again, did some great things. So mainly, for me, it was always the floor. And I think that's the reason that I had a lot of success. I always ran into venues that had nice, great dance floors. So, you know, mainly I would say the floor and certainly the DJ. Mm-hmm. That's what
those
made
are the two
hand
elements. The floor and the DJ is the two main elements of the hand dancing event. And you had somebody, and also you could add, maybe you could add another element, would be the individual who was given the event. Like, I remember if you mentioned the name Bernadette, you're the promoter. If you mentioned Bernadette,
yeah.
Seems like her events was always successful. It was just her name, just Bernadette. I'm going to Bernadette's event. And she was one of the ones that was doing events on a bigger scale, like the Camelot, the Convention Center, Blackburn Center. I mean, she did something, you know, a little bit different than some of the other hand dancers promoters did. You know, most hand dance promoters did something at little venues, but I think she did something to another level, especially the Convention Center. That's a tough nut to crack when you're talking about doing a hand dancing event. What about picking What about hand dancing picnics? How important are those? And are those something that, as a promoter, you would suggest someone do, a hand dancing picnic?
Well, I thought the picnics was great. You know, I didn't participate in a lot of picnics. Once in a while, you know, I might would go to a picnic of somebody that was really close with me or worked with me. But, man, that really wasn't my thing, the picnic. But Bernadette, just like you said, she was an outstanding promoter. She did have great events. And I'm going to tell you, back during, I guess back during the 90s, early 20s, I think those were the greatest events. I would even say the late 60s. I mean, it used to be great, great hand dance events. And at that time, they had the Hand Dance Association. I think back then, Earl Pope, he was the president, and he used to throw a lot of great events also in hotels. He had a great staff of people with him, too. And, I mean, it was so many great events, really, you know, because you had some great promoters, and everybody wanted to throw the best hand dance event to give people something to talk about. You know, how great that event was. And that's what made the fun, you know, that's why this was so fun back then. And I really liked the early days of hand dancing. I mean, you know, and also, you know, you had a thing because, like, a lot of the hand dance classes, these were new classes started to teach people how to hand dance. So the old hand dancers used to criticize the new hand dancers, and the new hand dancers would criticize the old hand dancers, but in all, it was great. People just had a good time, you know. I can say, you know, Betty Boo, she had some great events. And these promoters that I mentioned, Betty Boo, Bernadette, Lady D, who was a DJ promoter, Bird, all these people do great events, you know, and it was just a great time back in that time.
Well, I remember I came to this town in 1972, and we're celebrating 45 years of publishing. We started the magazine in 1975. There was no hand dance association. There was no hand dancing classes. I got introduced to hand dancing, and I was not a hand dancer. I did not dance for the first 25 years I came in this town. Never danced a dance step. But I was familiar with the people who were dancing, and they told me what they told me initially in the 75, 77, 76. They told me hand dancing was embedded in Washington, D.C. And if you was not from Washington, D.C., you couldn't do a hand dance because it was embedded in your soul, in your DNA, and you learned it from dancing with a doorknob or your mother taught to. But it was somebody from a D.C. originator or origin that taught it to you. And that's how you had to dance. That's what you had to do. It was a natural thing. There was no six count. There was no step. It came from you being naturally inclinated to dance. And then when Brad decided to do hand dancing classes, I was right there. I remember when he started the concept of a hand dancing class. The original Oldies, Inc., or people who were in these hand dancing originators, said, you can't do that. There's no way you could teach somebody how to hand dance. You have to know how it from your heart, from your DNA, from being from D.C. So when he started doing the classes, people who would see them dance from out of a class, the oldies people who were originated said, that's not hand dancing. And then when the twirls came around and the spins, they said, that's not what they do. It took Brad years to keep birthing people out of the hand dancing class where there was more people dancing like Brad taught them than people who originated hand dancing for real. Is that a true statement?
Yeah, somewhat. Now, before Brad, and you mentioned a group, Oldies, Inc. they did. In fact, Melvin, Black Melvin, I'm trying to think the young lady's Bird's girlfriend, fiance.
Maxine.
They talked Brad into doing, and Lulu from over the Chateau. And that was Brad's original dance partner. But anyway, they convinced Brad to start a class, you know. And Brad came in with a different concept of hand dancing. And Brad no hand dances. He studied hand dancing, not only hand dancing, other dances, social, ballroom dancing. And he just combined all this into hand dancing. And also, he performed live on stage in contests around the country, you know. And a lot of the oldies, hand dancers, they didn't like it. They felt that wasn't hand dancing because Brad brought hand dancing back. He made it popular because it was dying out. And he started dealing with younger people as well as older people, you know. And he made it fun, you know, the spins, the turns, because hand dancing was always known for step work, you know. And Brad just kind of threw the older hand dance crowd off a little bit with the spins and turns, you know. But eventually, you know, everybody started doing it. You know, it took some years. But I think Brad really did a lot for hand dancing. He brought it back because it was dying out. And another thing, hand dancing, I don't know if you know it, is the national dance of D.C.
You know? Right, right. It's becoming a national dance of D.C. It's becoming a national dance of D.C. But no, Brad, you have to give Brad his props because, matter of fact, you know, we can let Brad know that he definitely was somebody that was, we'll ring the bell for Brad because he basically put hand dancing on the map and a bigger aspect of hand dancing. And like you say, between the shows and the contests and the traveling around, et cetera, he took hand dancing to another level. Now, when they created the Hand Dancing Association, I was there from the very beginning of that also. The Brussels News was there. And I thought that was going to be one of the biggest organizations like the Congressional Black Caucus or the NAACP.
Right.
I thought that organization had the potential to be great, to be big, to be powerful. When they first started the National Hand Dance Association, Russell's News was there, and I remember them formulating the board of directors and, you know, the vice president, and Earl Pope was the president. I saw a vision for the National Hand Dance Association to be as big as the NAACP or the Congressional Black Caucus, because you had thousands and millions of hand dancers, and if everyone was a member of the National Hand Dance Association, that could be an organization that could control politics, who to vote for, you know, folks. I mean, it could have been big, and it was
big. It could have been big.
I saw the vision of that organization because there was so many hand dancers. I mean, you had political hand dancers. You had Vincent Gray was a hand dancer. You had people who were hand dancers, you know, and you know, Eleanor Holmes Norton. These were hand dancers. So I saw the organization becoming something of a staple in D.C. with a
powerful
voice.
Really.
It was going to be powerful. But somehow, because they even organized the DJs, they had the DJs, they said, okay, all the DJs going to be a member of the Hand Dance Association. We're going farm out work for you. We're going to get work for you. We're going to make sure that you get a certain amount of money for your gig, and we're going to have events, and we're going to hire you. We're going to do big promotional events and hire the Somehow, I don't know what happened, but the Hand Dance Association, when it started out, it had big legs. It started to run a little bit, and then it started to crawl. And now today, it's crawling. Why is that?
I really can't speak on it, but to me, it was a lot of greed involved in it and jealousy, you know, which is really really have destroyed the black race for some centuries, you know. And that's the issue that we're still learning how to love each other and work together. But that's what I felt happened, you know, because you had some great people involved, but you had some very selfish people as well, you know. And people are always a lot of hand dance promoters and DJs feel that they own hand dancing. If you didn't do it that way, you know, you wouldn't do it the right way and you couldn't be in the clique, you know. But, you know, as far as the hand dancer themselves, you know, they just enjoyed the dance. They didn't get into the political part, you know. But I felt, too, the Hand Dance Association, it should have been great, and it should be great now. And it's just people who, you know, just didn't like each other. And that's the way I feel. I could be wrong about it, but it was just so much.
Oh, you got a good point. You got a good point. Like I said, today, it's been almost 15, 20 years since this was, I think about 20-something years ago it started. It would be today one of the biggest powerful organizations. It's like Black Lives Matter. Black Lives Matter organization is big. It's huge.
Right.
I mean, you know, they got, I mean, Jeff Bezos gave $10 million. If you had an organization like that today, if the National Hand Dance Association was more organized, more connected, not, like you say, have jealousy or greed or envy or people were on the same accord and everybody would pay their dues and everybody would join. If every hand dancer, whoever was a hand dancer and is a hand dancer today, was a member of the National Hand Dance Association, it would be a powerful organization. They would even take maybe even very powerful. They would even take a park somewhere down in D.C. and name it Hand Dancing Plaza. It would be bigger than life if everyone who was a hand dancer was a member of the National Hand Dance Association. It would be huge. Let's switch gears a little bit and talk about romance and people falling in love in the hand dance community.
Love
and sex in the hand dance community. It's not for the weak at heart, Webster. It's not for the weak at heart. I have observed people who don't understand hand dancing, love and sex is not like love and sex in a normal situation. If you go, like I tell people all the time, if you go visit a hand dancing venue, it could be the Chateau, the Eclipse, it could be VFW, whatever. If you come there as a woman and you go into the world of a hand dancing professional, I call a professional hand dancer, he may not have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out. He may just got out of jail, but he can hand dance. And if that woman comes in that hand dance venue, and she could be a GS-15, once she starts dancing and if she falls in love with the individual, she don't understand what she's getting into. And it starts sometimes in the hand dancing class. Like what happens is they take a class and they get paired up. They may start a little romance in the class. But then they get burst out in the hand dance community and the real hand dancers start dancing with them and they start dating that person. But most people, men and women, can't escape the three R's. They get to be rejected, rebound, reused, or rebooted. Passed around. Why is that in the hand dance community? And they can't get out. In other words, if they date someone 1 year and they break up, they go back to the same venue and date somebody else. Go ahead.
That's right. You know, any new woman that steps into the hand dance world is a target, okay? Mm-hmm. And she didn't come there to meet anybody or to lay up with anybody, but she would run into this particular guy, you know, that could hand dance, had the moves. It could be an instructor or just could be a hand dancer who could dance. And that attracted a lot of new women because they wanted to learn how to hand dance. And they would see somebody who really, a man who really knew how to hand dance, and he would just sweep her off the floor because of his moves, his steps, and he knew how to talk. But mainly, he could dance. He could hand dance. And she, most women didn't know that they were going to get caught into a trap. You know, they would date this guy, and what she didn't know, these guys would pass her name around to each other, you know, letting them know, oh, man, she's a great person. She can do great sex and whatever, you know. And she just would get moved around from man to man, you know. And I don't think they even realized it until later on. And then they may fall in love with one guy, you know. And they think that guy's in love with her. But he's still doing his thing. He's dancing and moving around looking for the next woman to lay up. So it was a lot of that in-hand dance, a lot of broken hearts, you know. And most of the women, you know, all they wanted to do is get with a great hand dance man. And really, you know, and they just fell in love. I think they fell in love more with the guy because he could hand dance than they did just for guy is. And so a lot of women got caught in a lot of traps, you know. And I used to kind of, that was one of the parts of hand dancing I didn't like because I met a lot of great women, really, you know. And like I said, they just didn't know. They didn't know they were going to be caught in a trap, a hand dance trap. So those things did go on, my brother, you know. But it still go on today.
I like that terminology, caught in a hand dancing trap. Boy, you can't get out, man. You can't get out. Some people can't get out. They caught in a hand dancing trap, and they can't get out. They have to keep going back to the same venue where they got hurt, where their heart was shattered, and they have to see the guy. They have to see the guy. And then they have certain rules in a hand dancing community where you – I don't know where the rule came from or why it's the rule, but it's an unwritten rule. If you are a hand dancer, you are authorized to dance with as many people as you want to dance with. In other words, you can't put your lady on cedar rest or your man on cedar rest. In other words, if you're going with somebody and you bring them into a hand dancing venue, and she's been dancing with somebody else or she's dated somebody else, then that person, the past lover, has the right to get a hand dance. He can come up to your lady and say, hey, let's dance. And she will get up out the seat and leave you sitting there and dance with her past boy because they say, I don't know where the rule came from, but you can't tell somebody they can't dance with nobody else. Does that kind of make sense or is that something that is a rule?
Well, I think hand dance is a friendly dance. You know, I kind of look at it a little different, you know, because you had married couples who came out in hand dance and, you know, men and women you would come over and dance with these married individuals, you know. And then, again, you did say, mention how the ex men and women who just dated and had sex, you know, they would also, you know, dance with each other. But I kind of look at it just a little different because now you have people, now I ran into women, married women and single women, who came out to hand dance. And that's the only thing they came out for. Guys try to hit on them, you know, and had sex with them, but they just wouldn't do it, you know. So I really think that was based on the individual, how they think, you know, because, you know, nobody forced anyone to do anything. But I do think it was a lot of traps set up for single black women who came out to hand dance and who was new to hand dancing because they didn't know what they were getting into. You know, they really just wanted to hand dance and learn how to hand dance, and it just revolved to some distance, you know, it got to be sexual, you know. But I've seen a lot of things going in hand dance. You know, you had a lot of instructors who was having sex with their women students, you know, and some of those women would be married, you know, and guys, you know, instructors still would, you know, hit on these women and have sex with them. So, you know,
The instructor had the first dibs. The instructor had the first dibs. I mean, if you took a hand dancing class, what I observed, and I was not part of the hand dancing community or world like that, but what I observed and what I heard and what I've seen is that the instructor, when the class formulates, the instructor looks at who he wants to teach the hand dancing to, and it could be the finest woman in the hand dancing class. She could be married, she could be single, but she looks the best to that hand dancing instructor. So he would take her under her wing. He would say, hey, I'm going to teach you how to steps. And then everybody else, they partner up with somebody else in the class. But he would take that particular one. And then he would go by her house for private lessons. Or if she was not married, he'd maybe go by her apartment. But if she was married, maybe he'd invite her over his place. And that's how the sex got to be with the marriage. And I've seen married couples lose their marriage. Lose their marriage behind a hand dancing class. They took a class, and they asked the husband, they say, hey, I'm going to take a hand dancing class. And the husband say, well, I don't want to take the class. She says, well, I'm going to take the class. So she takes the 6-week class, but then she's so engulfed in hand dancing, because hand dancing is an aphrodisiac, it's addictive. And if you do one day, you want to do another day. So now you're doing 2 to 3 to 4 days a week at a hand dancing venue, and your husband's at home. And then it turns into a situation where that woman now starts dating somebody in the hand dancing community, and the husband comes by the hand dancing venue one day and see this woman grinding or bopping or dancing with some guy, and he knows it's more than a dance. And that marriage gets dissolved. I mean, because of the woman could not stop going to the hand dancing venues, and she started sleeping with somebody in the hand dance, and she loses her home, her house, situations. I've seen a situation where a lady was so pretty and so fine, and she had all kind of designer dresses and $300 shoes, and she drove a brand new Corvette. The women got to not liking her. They slashed the tires, burnt the house down. These things went on in the hand dance community.
You said initially
greed and trust, whatever you want to say, but you know, expand on that. Why so many people got hurt in the hand dance community?
Well, again, going back to what you said, spoke about the instructor, the hand dance instructor. For one thing, the hand dance instructor do have the edge, because he get a chance to see the new woman that comes into hand dancing, because he's teaching her, you know. So usually, like you said, he'll go out his way to get that woman to tell her that I'm going to teach you how to hand dance, or I want you to be in my hand dance troupe, okay? And I'm going to teach you. And what I mean by hand dance troupe, these are groups that hand dance classes put together, a lot of good hand dancers, to teach them different the hand dancing, the steps, moves, and turns, and then they perform. They may go to city to city to perform. And then a lot of people like that, a lot of especially new hand dancers, but now they're feeling they're learning the hand dance and they can hand dance, okay? And they'll do anything to be in that hand dance troupe, even if they have to lay up with the instructor. That's what they want, okay? It's been a lot of, like you said, it's been a lot of marriages broken up because of hand dancing, you know. And to me, you know, I base stuff on principles. You know, you got some good people, good instructors with good heart who are there to teach hand dancing, but then you got the instructors who want to take advantage of the new people that come in hand dancing, which are women, you know, and they look at it as sex, and I'm going to get her, you know, mine, and the instructor get to the point, even if that woman got a boyfriend or a husband, he feel that's his one, you know, and the woman would allow him to do that. You know, the instructor was like God to a lot of new hand dance women, okay? I personally, you know, I don't think I experienced those things. I did myself date a couple of women in hand dancing. I didn't have those issues. I had other issues with them, you know, because you had some women too. Once you start dancing with them, if you had sex with them, they claim, you know, they feel that you belong to them. You know, so, you know, it was all types of issues that come up in hand dancing. You know, and I guess, you know, it's always going to be good and bad, you know. But basically, you hit it on the nose. Those things did happen in hand dancing and still do. Never anything changed, you know.
Well, you got to look deep before you leap. And you got to know what you are, who you are, what you think you want to be if you want to be in the hand dancing community. Because
right.
If you go in there blind and not have your eyes open, then you're going to be taken advantage of to some degree by somebody. So you need to, as a man or a woman, you need to realize that I've seen situations where a man has met a woman that he thought was going to be his woman, and he was a hand dancer, and he thought that, wow, this lady I met does not hand dance. But I do hand dance, so I'm going to teach her how to hand dance. So he takes the time to teach her how to hand dance. Then he wants to bring her to hand dancing venues and
he's
dance
right.
with her to show her off. But she's so pretty and so fine. And like I say, there's some kind of unwritten rule in the hand dance community that you're allowed to go dance with your partner's woman or whatever she is to that person. And so now she dances around. Then he decides 6 months later, he don't want to date her anymore, and he stops dating her. He quits her. He throws her to the curb, but she can't not stop coming to the hand dance venue because that's where now she's a hand dancing addictive. So she's
right.
still coming. They don't go together anymore, and now she starts getting passed around. 2 years later, he's in the venues, and he sees his woman that he brought there. He's the one who brought her to the venue. And now she's three
right.
or four dudes down, and he don't like that because he was in love with her at one time. But that's
right.
what it goes. That's how it goes in the hand dance community.
You know, Russell,
I base
everything on principles, you know. Some people have good principles and mores, and some people don't. What I feel about hand dancing, you know, if you come to learn how to hand dance or you come to dance, that's what you're supposed to do. You know, that was supposed to be your purpose. But when you, because men also get used in hand dancing too, because I've seen a lot of good brothers fall in love with these women that he thought was his woman, and she's dealing with 10 other guys. So, and I don't think stuff like that will ever stop. I mean, you're going to see that on the job, off the job. You know, it's just life, you know. That's just things that happen, you know. I wouldn't say that's a hand dance thing. That's just a life issue that goes on.
Excellent.
But I still say if the purpose of hand dancing is to come out and enjoy yourself and dance. And, you know, I feel in order to get to become a good or great hand dancer, you have to dance with other people, you know. And like I said, I've seen married couples come out, and believe me, they come out just to dance. They ain't going to deal with no other man. They're not going to disrespect their husband. Or if the husband's not going to disrespect the wife, they came out to hand dance. And after the place closed, they go home together, you know. You may not even see them dance but 3, 4, 5 times in the event, you know, a married couple, you know, because they're dancing with other people. And they're dancing with other people to get better, you know. Mm-hmm. And then you got other people, you know, that do it just to meet somebody else. So, you know, it's your purpose. What purpose do you come out to hand dance? That's the way I look.
Excellent. I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about how you really love the craft so much that you invest your time and your money. Tell us what makes you look at a venue, Because I remember you looking at a particular venue in Greenbelt, I believe it was, the VSW in Greenbelt. And you went into that venue. Now, you didn't have to do this, and I want to ring the bell for you, Webster, because you went to that venue, and you saw that the venue needed assistance, not only financially, but they needed someone to care. And you started investing your hard-earned money, putting TVs in. What makes you do something like that to a venue that you don't even own? But what makes you do something to that degree?
Okay, Russell, I'm surprised you remember that or do about that. But, you know, my thing, Russell, I like people, you know. And anything that I involve myself in, it, if it needs some type of assistance on dance floors or if some tables or whatever, I'm not really doing it for the face. I'm doing it for people that I want to come out and enjoy, you know, the hand dance program that I'm doing, you know. You know, my thing is to make people happy. You know, I used to buy food and give it away, you know, anything to make people come out. I used to love when people would tell me, Webster, I had a nice tan. You know, you can even wear all this food, you know. The face looked nice, you know. And, you know, I lost a couple of faces. And one time, well, this one particular face I lost, they shut down. And Bernadette, when I walked in the place, my new place, and that was Mirror, Bernadette got up with a bunch of other people and a thought, you know. And she said, Webster, you always treat your hand dance straight. You the only one that did that, you know. And it's about love, man, that the place you're talking about in Greenbelt. In fact, you know, I did a lot of things there, you know, not just to help hand dancers, but just to help them as well, you know. And sometimes people don't appreciate the things you do, but I still can't hate on them. I still got to love them. I refuse to let them change my way of thinking, you know. I go on in spite of, I'm still going to love the people that I'm working with, you know. I want them to, you know, continue to support me, and you do that by love, you know. I don't even care about the money, Russell, you know, because I believe if you got people in your life, you're going to make money anyway. So, you know, and that's the way I always felt. I've helped a lot of people, and a lot of people have helped me. It don't go one way. And a lot of times, you know, people help you who you think didn't really care that much for you, you know. And to, you know, you get into a bad situation, and most of the people that came through for me is the people I didn't even think they cared that much for me, you know. So, that's the way I am, Russell, you know. I'm a giver, and I'm always going to be a giver, you know. And I'm going to be okay. A lot of times I don't make the money that a lot of the other hand dance promoters make, but I get more love than they do, you know. So that makes
me
feel good.
Well, that's what it's all about. It's about the love. Like I tell people, people say to me all the time, well, why do you give your events for free? Why don't you charge? Why don't you? And I could tell people it's the giving of me giving the event and the awards and the people that are coming out and the magazine. It's more important for me to have people read the magazine, to give an award,
right,
to change their life, to change their life. It's not about making a lot of money on an event. For me, it never has been. I've been doing this 45 years. I don't think I ever made any money off events. I just
right,
gave good events, and people came to me. I pulled different, what do you call it, clientele of people from the people with the government and the Congress people,
right,
and the business.
That's
people.
Right.
When you come to a Russell's event, it's not a hand dancing event. It's an business networking event where you're going to meet a lot of
right,
businesses and people who got stuff, and there's going to be some hand dances there, but it's not that kind of venue where I'm saying, oh, it's $7
right,
to come in and got to do this and do that. No, it's mainly to meet people and to enhance your business and enhance your life.
That's
so,
right.
Like I say, I've always admired you, Wester, because you were someone who was giving events from your heart. Like I told you, like I said earlier in this interview, I watched you put your own money up. I mean, you went to that DSW and you invested money in TVs and dance floors and tables, and then you tried to show them what you could do on a certain night, and you was there. I mean, you hired people. You even had the magazine promoted. You took ads out. You were sincere about the venue. So people, if anyone who was at that venue or was part of that venue, should have been on their knees before Orange Juice thanking you.
Yeah, but, you know, again, you know, like, you know, sometimes we just have to take the bad with the good. But the thing is, you have to change your heart, you know, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got to keep on, and you do it like you say, Russell. Because, Russell, I don't know if you know, when I first started out, I did three events hand dance events. In fact, I might have been the first one who did three. And this was at the 2K9. All those events in the beginning was free. And then we started charging $2, $3, you know. And nobody had ever did it. Most people wanted $5 and more for you to come out to their hand dance event. But like I said, I don't really think I did it to make money. You know, I enjoyed the dance and I enjoyed the people. And I did it for the people, you know. You know, and
well, you did a good job. You did a good job.
Yeah,
you did an excellent job, man. You took care of a lot of people. A lot of people have enjoyed themselves because of what you have produced. 2K9 was a venue that never should have closed. When the white boys bought it, when I think the gay people bought it after that, and now they sold it for like $5 million or something like that. They sold it for millions, and now it's something else. I mean, but that was no
fish. That's right.
That black guy owned that. He owned that building, man. He didn't understand what he had. He had no idea what he had because
it
that
was
building.
A family. Him and his mother actually owned it. You know, she was a professor over at Howard University. And she was married to another doctor over at Howard University. And anyway, it was so much that went in that deal. You know, they thought it all as a bad deal because they kind of used the husband, you know. But, you know, they just made it a bad place because that should have been one of the baddest places in D.C. right now.
Oh, no question, no question. It should have been. And when even when the homosexuals had it, you know, the gay people had it, they made it to a money-making venue, but they sold it. Now it's a condominium. Now it's a condominium. Yeah. Now it's a condominium. I mean, the location was off the chain, man. I mean, it was off the chain. We had some clubs, but we lost everything. You know, we lost Ed Murphy's Supper Club on 14th and U Street.
Right.
Could you imagine having a club with a parking, underground parking, inside the Reed Center today?
Oh, you know, I didn't even mention that place. I did events there myself, you know. So, you know. That was another place I did hand dance events. But, you know, two people we haven't spoken about, Marcia. When I first met you, you know, I met you, I think I met you through Marcia, or did I meet Marcia through you? But anyway.
You might have met Marcia through me because I was helping Marcia out with the hand dance and stuff, man. She loved hand dancing so much that she was giving hand dancing classes at the firehouse, and then she did some great stuff, man. And she gave a hand dancing venue over at the hotel over there off of 450, and you know it just stuff that she put her money up, man, to try to do a venue. But also the other place that we didn't mention was it was like an Elks Lodge across the street from the V Center. It was a little club that was awesome, man. You could buy half pints and the hot dogs and stuff, and they had the hand dancing in there, and then they sold, like a dummy, they sold a Masonic temple, kept Masonic temple on 10th and U Street, but they sold that Masonic temple. They sold the one across
right.
the recent. And then you went in there and tried to do something there. That, how come that place never did kick off? That place is closed today. It's been three or four things, but you went in there and tried to do a hand dancing venue there. Remember that?
Yes, I do, you know. But it's money and people want support. You know, sometimes we want to support our venues. And really downtown there, that was hard for people years ago when we used to go to Else Lot. People didn't care anything about parking. I guess because we were young and we would park from blocks away and walk, you know, especially if it was a known place to go, you know. But I guess as we get older, we don't want to walk as much, you know. And then they tried to do go-go in there, and I think they had a lot of some suits and bikes in there, and they cut it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I tried to come back and do stuff. But, you know, that could – they just didn't have no money, man. The place needed working on, you know, and that kind of hurt them, you know. They just couldn't get the backing. I can understand it because of being – the Elks, you know, the Masonic Temple, I figured they had people with money who were supportive, but they didn't. I guess they just got so old or whatever. They just couldn't get the backing. But I still feel that can be a great place to do the event.
Well, the Masonic
really,
Temple
you know.
Is on 10th and U Street. I mean, that's a heck of a location for a place to be with a big dance floor, big venue. I mean, it seems like that would have been big every night, man. Just like 9:30 Club. It would have been big every night.
Right.
It would have had some bands there and people, venues there. It would have been big. But I was one of the only people to be able to put 600-700 people in the Masonic Temple on a Wednesday night.
Oh, you did a great job. Yes, you did a great job. Definitely.
Because
yep,
it was,
yep.
Everybody said, I'm not going to the Masonic Temple. There's no problem. But if I had my Oscar-winning Christmas party there, it was packed, you know, on a Thursday or Wednesday night. You was there, yeah. Just, I'm the only one that was able to pack that Masonic Temple like that.
You
but
did.
I tell
you did.
But I tell you, Wester, this has been one heck of an interview, one-on-one. I want to tell you, first off, I think you're one of the best promoters out there. You have touched people's lives, DJs, venues, club owners. You helped so many people, and that's why ringing the bell for you is a pleasure. But I want you to give us your closing statements.
Well, before I get at, you remember Cece? You used to work with me, the young girl wore the glasses on the desk.
Yeah.
And you had her. You wanted her to do some writings for you.
Right.
She really helped put me on the map. You know, she was out. In fact, she was one of Brad's instructors, you know. But she made ICP, Inner City Productions, you know, she was the one that made the program work, really. But anyway, my closing statement is just to love, give and love and help. You know, that's my closing statement, and trust in God.
Yeah,
well,
that is a mouthful right there, because I tell you, boy, trusting God and love and peace and all that is awesome. Again, this has been the number one podcast, the ultimate podcast in the DMV. It's called Pulling Your Eyelids Open, and we truly pulled some eyelids open this morning as far as the promoters, the hand dance community, and Wester is an excellent promoter. See you tomorrow morning. My name is Russell Price. I'm the publisher of Be There Magazine. Yeah.
a great show. Here's a list. So listen to the show.